All right, welcome everybody to Moedon Hebrew. Not that anyone cares, I put that in. Hebrew Club, we are on 1 Samuel chapter 4, verse 12, right in the middle of the Eli story. And I'm going to try to get to the end of the chapter today so that we can start chapter 5 next week. So if some of you have to excuse yourself and go, but you want to finish up, just kind of, if you want to look through it for your devotions during the week or something, feel free to do that, because I think I'm going to try to go all the way through verse 21. And then start a new section. All right, so we are on verse 12 again. Vayaratz ish bin yamin me ha-ma'araka vayavo shilo bayom ha-hu u-madav keru'im va'adama al rosho. Okay, and a man of Benjamin ran. See the root of yaratz is roots. It's a hollow verb. And you know by that by the what? How can you tell it's hollow? What's the giveaway?
The comet's under the yud.
A man of Benjamin ran from Hamaaraka, from the battle line. Remember we had that word earlier? From the battle line. Bayavo. And he entered Shiloh, Bayom Hahu, on that day. Now notice the circumstantial clause. U-madav. Madim means clothes. Madav. So, and his clothes, keru'im. What's the root here?
Kara.
Good. Kara, it means to rip, to be ripped. All right, this is a call passive participle. Notice his clothes were torn, and adama, dirt, was on Rosho, his head. Mm-hmm. All right. Verse 13, Vayavo vehine eli yoshev al hakisei yak derek metzafapi hayalibo chared al aron ha'elohim v'ha'ishba lahagid ba'ir v'tiz'ak kol ha'ir. Okay. Notice how it resumes. You had the vayavo in verse 12, and then it gave this little circumstances about his clothes, and so now it kind of reiterates. So he came. So he entered. Okay. Vehine, and look. Now notice that the vehine here functions kind of as a focus particle, I think. It's going to tell something specifically about Eli. Okay, and so notice it's kind of a deviation. Again, gives more circumstances or background knowledge. So he entered, Vehine, and look. Now it tells you to kind of pay attention to what's coming next. Eli Yoshev. And notice very frequently after Vehine clauses, the verb is a participle. All right, and you have this kind of immediate perception. And I think this is a signal from the author to pay attention to this circumstance, okay? So we entered, and look, Eli Yoshev was sitting al hakiseh, on the seat, or maybe the article here means, remember the article can sometimes be used where we would use a possessive. So he was sitting on his chair. So he had, you know, old men have their own chairs. You don't sit in your grandfather's place. So he was sitting on his chair. Okay, now notice this next form, yak. Yud kaf in the text, which would be based on the root naka, to strike, but that makes no sense here. So if you'll look at the side margin, there is a kare reading, which means they want you to read yad, hand. Everybody see that? All right. So that they're not going to change the consonantal text, even though the Masoretes are judging that this is an incorrect reading. All right. So yad would mean side of the road. See, so Eli was sitting on his chair at the side of the road. All right, so he was kind of by the entrance to the city at the side. Everybody see that? So when you get to this word, if you're reading the text out loud, you don't read yak, you read yad. That's what they're saying. All right. Metzapeh, that's from Zafa. We've actually had this word before. It's a PL participle. It means to watch. So he was sitting, and notice it kind of parallels Yoshev. Eli was sitting on his throne by the side of the road. Metzapeh, what was he doing? Watching. Okay. Ki haya libo kared. For his heart was kared. Anxious. That's a... Here an adjective, karad, means to shake or to tremble. So his heart was anxious, al aron, over the ark of God. Okay? Notice you have an atnach there, so you pause. So we're kind of starting a new thought. Veha ishba. Okay? But the man had entered. Now, the reason I am translating it this way is because of what comes next. Evidently, notice the author gives this bit that Eli was sitting by the road, so evidently the messenger had just passed him by. See? Eli was sitting there waiting. Now, what comes next will make that clear. Okay, so I'm kind of backfilling. So I'm taking this clause, Veha'ish, as contrast. Eli was sitting there. What's implied is you'd think that the guy would stop and tell Eli because he was the judge in Israel. I mean, he was the priest, see? But the man had entered to Hagid, to report Ba'ir in the city. All right. Now, in English, we'd probably say, but the man had entered in the city, Lehagid, to make his report. See? All right. Va'tizak kol ha'ir, and all the city cried out. It's easy to fill in the gap here. He went in, he spoke the news, all the city cried out. Alright? Does anyone have any questions about verse 13? Does everyone kind of see the logic of how the author is talking here? Okay? Notice that you kind of get this storytelling style, so he reiterates things and he'll do a little asides as he's going through. Okay? So now notice what happens next in verse 14. Vayishma Eli et kol ha-tze'aka vayomer ma-kol he-hamon ha-zeh v'ha-ish mihar vayavo vayageh le-Eli. Okay. Now, vayishma, when Eli heard et kol, the sound of the tze'aka, when Eli heard the sound of the outcry, okay, vayamor, he said, meh, what kol is the sound of the hamon. Hamon is from the root hamat, to be confused. So here, hamon would be what is the sound of the uproar? What is the uproar? Yeah, and notice that it's probably kind of an attribute of the sound. What is the uproarious sound, or what is the tumultuous noise or something? This tumultuous noise, hazeh. Okay? Vehaish. Now here you go. Vehaish. Then the man, mihar, hurried. Okay, notice that that is from the root mahar. What conjugation is it? Piel. No dagation, the hay, because the hay tends to swallow it up. Then the man hurried, vayavo, here it is again, and he came, vayaged, and he reported it, le'eli, to Eli. So you see what happened? The guy passed Eli while he was waiting anxiously, spoke the news in the city. Eli heard the uproar. Then the man came out and told Eli what had happened. Okay, everybody see that? That's why I translated the previous clause as I did. Okay? Any questions so far? All right, verse 14, 15. Ve'eli ben tishim ushamunashana. Ve'enav kama v'lo yakol lirot. Okay. Again, a little aside, a little knowledge. Now, Eli was a son of Tishim. I never get numbers anyway, so don't worry too much about numbers. But this is 90 from Tisha. Tishim was 90 and Shemona, 8 years. Again, remember, with year, man, very often the noun is singular. In English, we would say years, Hebrew style, shana, year. Okay, so Eli was 89 years old. We wouldn't say son of 88. Okay, Eli was 88 years old. Ve'enav, and his eyes, kama. Now look closely at this word. What's the root? It's very common. Take your guess. You'll know. You'll be right. Kum. It's from kum. And what aspect? Call, third feminine singular.
So his eyes are rose.
And notice the subject is plural. His eyes had risen. Okay, if that's the meaning you want to put here. Very frequently, if you look in the grammars, they'll give you another examples. You'll have plurals of either masculine or feminine objects with a feminine singular noun. Another way to understand this comma is, Bethany might know this, an Aramaism. third feminine plural. Remember, third feminine plurals in Aramaic have that ah ending. All right, so it could be kind of a dialectical form here. And you get that frequently, you know, in narration, that kind of thing. Okay, so, but you can see that his eyes goes with comma. Now, so he was 98 years old, and so his eyes, comma, had risen. I don't know. I always get this, you know, in the vampire movies, their eyes go white. Maybe that's what it means. He had cataracts or something, so their eyes could actually look white. I don't know. Mm. It just freaks me out anyway. Now, it explains a little more what this means. Ve-lo, that is, notice the vav here connects what is in apposition or in explanation to what it means by einav, comma. That is, he was not able, lirot, to see from ra'ah. Yakol is a call, masculine singular, third masculine singular. It's sometimes written with the vav, sometimes without. Okay? That is, he was not able, lirot, to see. And then notice the infinitive construct is the object of this verb, yakol, not able to what? To see. Okay. Questions about verse 15? All right. Vayomer ha'ish el Eli, anoki ha'ba min ha'ma'araka, vani min ha'ma'araka nasti hayom, vayomer mehaya hadavar beni. Then the man, now it's going to go specifically into what the man said. The man said to Eli, I am the one ba, I am the one who has come. Notice haba is a participle used as a substantive, as a noun. Okay, I am the one, I'm sorry, yeah. Mm-hmm. I am the one who has come from the battle line. So he has to identify himself because Eli can't see. Okay, I'm the one who has come from the battle line. And I, from the battle line, nasti, fled. What's the root of nasti? Anyone see it? Noose, yeah, again, a pretty common word. Call perfect, first common singular, hollow verb. And I fled from the battle. So not only did I come from the battle, and I fled from the battle hayom today. And he said, namely Eli, what is hadavar? What's the report, Beni, my son? What's the report, my son? Okay. Vayan ha mevaser vayomer nas Yisrael lifne pelishtim vegam magefa gerola hayatza Ba'am, v'gam shnei ba'neka meitu chofnu pinchas va'aron ha'elohim nilkacha. Could hardly be worse. Okay, and the mevaser. See the root of mevaser? It's basar, and it means to announce. This is a piel participle, masculine singular, again used as a substantive. And the messenger Ya'an from Anna, and the messenger answered. Remember, Bach consecutive imperfects of third hayes, the hay drops off, you have that shortening. And the messenger answered and said, Nas Yisrael, Israel has fled. From Nus, third masculine singular, Israel has fled Lifnei before the Philistines. Vegam, and in addition, Magefa gerola hayatabayam. A magefa, a blow, a defeat. Magefa. From nagaf, remember, to strike, to plague. A magefa gerola. A great defeat happened, hayata. Notice that that's third feminine singular because of magefa. A great defeat happened, ba'am, to the people, or upon the people. Okay? So notice there's one vegam. Here's another. Vegam, and in addition, Shnei Baneka, your two sons. All right, notice Shnei is in construct. We've seen that before. It doesn't have to be, but here it is. Your two sons, Metu, have died. From Mut, again, another call, hollow verb, have died, namely Hophni and Pinchas. Okay, now he doesn't add the vegam. He just kind of leaves it. It's the last in the series. But here's the worst, really. And the Ark of God, Nilkaka, has been taken. Remember the Nifal of Lakach? We got it in verse 11, third masculine singular. Here is the third feminine singular, Nilkaka, because the Ark of God has been taken. All right. Questions through verse 17?
Why won't the ark be masculine?
It's just a evidently the word itself is feminine. Yeah, I don't know why. It doesn't always go by, especially inanimate objects change. Yeah, so I have no. It's just part of the language, I guess. Okay. Good. Any other questions on 17? All right, verse 18. Vayehi kehaz kiro et aron ha'elohim vayepol me'al ha'kisei achoranit ve'ad yad ha'sha'ar v'tishaber mafrakto. Mafrakto, dwell on that. Mafrakto vayamot ki zaken ha'ish ve'kaved ve'hu shafat et Yisrael arba'im shana. Okay. Vayehi, now, so notice how the narrative kind of divides itself. He starts a new paragraph. Now, keh hazkir. Even if you've never seen this word, you know what kind it is. Okay, what do you know about this word? What is it?
It's a hifil.
It's a hifil. Good, what else? You know the root, zakar, and you know the aspect, it's infinitive construct. How do you know that? Because of the cough in front of it, see? And very frequently, remember, after Vayehi's, you're going to have some kind of temporal construction, temporal clause. And very often it's an infinitive construct with a bait or a cough. Here it's a cough. Okay? So zakar means to remember. And here the hifil would be to remind someone, see, cause someone to remember. And notice there's two objects, the suffix and then the et aron ha'elohim. See? So now it happened, as soon as he reminded him about the ark of God. Okay? Vayipo. He fell from Nafal. He fell from Hakisei, from his chair. Achoranit. Remember, achor means behind. So here, this is the adverb backwards. Achoranit. So even if you haven't seen this word, if you know that achor family, achoron, acharit, acharit, backwards, that kind of thing. He fell off his chair backwards. Be'ad yad, by the side of, or at the side of ha-sha'ar, of the gate. All right. Now, I pause there. Okay, let me translate it and then show you how I think that the phrases logically are a little out of place. Okay. So he fell off the gate. Ba-tishaber. What's the conjugation here? You see the root shabar, which means to shatter or break. So what's the root here? Or the conjugation? That's a nifal, right? You know that by the big commas, see? So it was broken. And the subject comes next. Mafrakto, his neck. Mafreket. You don't have to put this word on vocab cards because I think it occurs only once or twice. Mafreket, I think maybe only here, actually. So, and his neck was broken. And he died. Kizakane. For old was the man, the kaved, and heavy. Now, I think that this key clause actually logically goes with the falling off the chair rather than the dying. In other words, it's not so much an explanation of that he broke his neck and died. Why did he break his neck and die? Because he was old. But why did he fall off his chair? Because he heard the news. He fell off his chair because he was an old man and he was heavy. Okay, and his neck was broken and he died. And now notice it sums up as you would expect. And he had judged Israel for, notice this accusative extent, for 40 arba'im shana, years. Okay? Good. Any questions about verse 18? Any of the forms or anything? Alright? So now that you get this little interesting snippet coming here in 19. Vekalato eshet pinchas haralalat vatishma et hashemuna el hilakach aron ha'elohim umeit chamiha ve'isha vatikra vatelet ki nehefku aleha zireha. Okay. There's a lot of unfamiliar words here and a lot of familiar ones. Vekalato, and his daughter-in-law, from Kala. Okay, and his daughter-in-law, namely the Aisha Pinchas, the wife of Pinchas, Hara, was pregnant. Now this next form, if you look at 19a, I think that it's correct here. The reading should be Laledet. There's a dalet missing, because the root is Yalad. And remember, those first yud verbs very often have infinitive constructs in a segalet form, like Yashav, Shevet, Yalad, Ledet. So the dalet has dropped out. So it means, I think, the wife of Pinchas was pregnant to bear. In other words, was pregnant on the verge of giving birth. All right? Vatishma, when she heard et ha-shemua. Now, even if you've never seen this word before, you know the meaning, because it's from the root shama, a very familiar word, see? When she heard the report concerning hilakach aron. Okay, look at that form. It's a nice nifal infinitive from lakach. We've had a lot of nifals of lakach in this chapter. Very interesting, right? Okay, so when she heard the report, El, remember El and Al are exchanged an awful lot more than you might think. And you'll see it here another place, just a few verses down. So the meanings overlap. So when she heard the report concerning the ark being taken, the ark of God being taken, C-R-U in English, concerning the fact that the ark had been taken, Umeit Chamiha. This is from Cham, and it's her father-in-law. Again, it only occurs a few times, but notice that this behaves like three other words that you learned. If you look in Bartelt, like page 88 or page 89, remember the words Av, father, Peh, mouth, and Ach, brother. When you add a suffix, you get that archaic Yud that comes back. The same thing happens with this word. So you have the singular Cham. When you add the suffix, you have the yud, chamiha, her father-in-law. Okay? So when she heard the report about the ark being taken and that her father-in-law had died and her husband, notice you have two subjects there, singular verb because they're taken as a unit, comma, vatikra from kara. That means she bent over, she crouched down, she bent over, vatela, and she gave birth. Okay? T for nehefku. This is from the root hafak, another nifal. Now, and then the word zir, you're not going to know this one. Zir reha, see the last word? Zir means pains. Okay? She stooped over and gave birth for her pangs were overcoming her, or turned upon her. And I think that this is an explanation kind of for what comes next. We get the surprising news that she died in childbirth. So, I mean, maybe it's a way of saying that her pains were kind of not the normal. She crouched over and gave birth, and that gives this other thought as preparation for what comes next. Indeed, her pains overcame her, see? Or, her pains were too much for her, or turned her over, or something like that. Okay, because notice what comes next. Uke'et muta. And about the time of her death. This is from mavet. Okay, and then you just add the suffix and it becomes muta. The suffix is formed on the infinitive construct. Okay, and about the time that she died. Yeah, maybe that's probably an easier way to explain it, the infinitive construct. About the time she died, vatedaberna. They spoke. This is a third feminine plural. Tedaberna. They spoke ha nitzavot, the standing ones. This is a nifal participle from natzav. Those who were helping her, the standing around.
The
ones.
Assumption here is that they were women.
Yes.
because of the feminine forms.
Yeah. Feminine forms. So they were the women actually helping with the childbirth. See. The standing around one said, Aleha. Here instead of El, you have Al. They said to her, Al Tireti, don't fear, from Yareh, don't fear, for a son, Yaladka, for a son you have born. Okay? Velo Anta, but not did she answer, from Anna, and not Shata. This is from Sheet, to put her to place. All right, third feminine singular. And she did not set Libah her mind on it. Mm-hmm. Namely, something like she didn't respond or she didn't comprehend or something like that. Okay? Any questions about this verse?
Just overall regarding the nifl form here, is there kind of any sort of theological implication here with this sort of ongoing nifl here? It just seems like it's kind of a passive happening to people here. And
right. I think that it's just this way of expressing these different events. The Ark of the Lord was taken, from their perspective, was taken. I mean, you could explain it a different way. God allowed the people to have... God allowed the Philistines to take the ark, or God punished the Israel by having them take the ark. Instead, it's this passive form, kind of, so the author is not overtly saying that, but it's all implied.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's very easy to grasp that implication because of what God had told Eli earlier through Samuel, remember? So here is kind of the ending of that whole story, this whole Eli saga comes to this bitter end right here with the ark being taken.
Just like, you know, you kind of have this sort of theological implication with the hippo form of God doing stuff or causing stuff. Maybe there's sort of a resultative nifal thing going on here. I don't know.
I don't know. I wouldn't push the individual form too much. I think that it's just the author here, this is kind of the style that he, and the perspective that he wants to take on this narrative as he's telling this story. Mm-hmm. And you can draw the implications on your own quite readily that it's really God's hand that's doing this. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Verse 21. Vatikra la nahar, and she called. Now here the lamed functions as an accusative marker, and she called the boy E kavod. E is where kavod, where the glory. See, E kavod, where the glory, laying, meaning, or yeah, lemor, meaning, gala kavod, the glory, gala. Remember, you learned gala as to reveal, but it also means to go into exile. Mm. So the glory has gone into exile, Yisrael, from Israel. Okay. Notice the pause there, Atnach. And now you have to kind of put in parentheses, she said this, El, now here is the same form that we had back in verse 19, El Hilakacharon HaElohim. She said this about, or because of the fact that the Ark of God, Hilakah, had been taken. Notice again, this is an infinitive, so literally it's concerning the taking of the Ark of God. Okay? Everybody see how that struck? That's the same construction, basically, that we saw in verse 19. Okay? And about, and concerning, Chamiha, her father-in-law, Ve'isha, and her husband. Okay, so because of all these events, that's why she named her son what she did. Alright? Batoma Tomer, and so she said, Gala Kavod mi Israel. So she said, the glory has gone in exile from Israel. Ki, for Nilkach, Aron HaElohim, for the Ark of God had been taken, Nilkach. So notice, he really presses that point about the taking of the Ark of God, and it kind of serves as a foreshadowing of the next event in chapter 5, where we turn to what happened to the Philistines with the Ark. So notice how, very interestingly now, the author kind of leaves the, after this little incident about what happened to Eli's family, you don't get any more about that. You get now the picking up of the Ark being taken. That really becomes the focus of what's next. So notice how the narrator kind of prepares for you that as he actually shifts his focus from that. And notice, too, it's interesting how he orders the information. When Eli was told what had happened, the ark being taken was last. Here, notice it's the ark first. It's kind of foremost in her mind. This is, and so, again, it becomes foremost in the mind of the reader. This is the real tragedy that happened to Israel. The kavod, having gone into exile, departed from Israel.
I'm wondering if it has any idea of the shifting of priorities in Eli's mind, because it seems to him that he put his sons and such ahead of the ark, ahead of God.
Good, yeah.
And so really, you know, maybe it's the daughter-in-law really had it right, and that was the most important thing, and then the added emphasis.
That's a very kind of implied possibility of why the things are ordered as they have, because in her mind, it's the ark that boom is first. It's hard to say because in Hebrew sometimes, I mean, and in English too, sometimes we put something last because it's the most important. Sometimes first, I don't know what the rules are for that actually. Yeah. I don't know if we have any rules. We just kind of go by what's happening in the context and all these other issues. So anyway, that brings us to kind of the end of Eli, and now we have this really interesting story about what happens to the ark in chapters 5 and 6. All right? All right, thank you.